June 25, 2021, so what for Pedro's show. Watt for Pedro show. Happy Friday. I'll start off with something I dreamed last night from John Coltrane. And then Vertonghen, hope I pronounced that right, November 30, 1969. And, yeah, man alone. But as of yesterday, it's been 2 weeks since my second Moderna. So, and Brother Matt is, you can see, people, I'm not man alone because of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention. I got Blake Edwards with me. Welcome aboard, Blake.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike. I appreciate it.
Well, what's the word? Likewise? Yeah. No, really, we got to thank the Brutal Sound Effects crew for the Kinect. And I know you're in on that too, right? I'm thanking the forces that be to make this thing because I don't know. It's. I want to check out your journey through music. Please, sure. Bring the earliest musical recollection you got, please.
Earliest musical recollection was probably stuff my folks had on records. They didn't listen to a lot of records, but my parents had a lot of classical music. And then a lot of, like, kind of bad 70s stuff, like Bread.
My mom liked Bread.
Yeah, so that would be, like, the most nascent point. But, again, we didn't – not a lot was – they didn't have the turntable active very often when I was growing up. But my sister and I both played musical instruments.
Oh, well, let me ask you this. In that pad you grew up, were you younger than your sister?
Yes, 1 year.
And only one year.
I still am younger than.
Yeah, that's what I. I would make a big time educated guess. That's still true. But what I've had so many cats on the show that make adventures through music that had older brothers and sisters that turned them onto their rock and roll records or they were playing shit or something. That's a trip. But this pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments?
Yeah. So my sister played piano. And I played guitar, not together as a duo, but just independently. We both played.
Well, tell me how you got on the guitar.
You know, funny you should mention the older sibling influence, because I think I got on because, you know, my sister was playing the piano, and I think my mom and dad might have been talking, like, if I wanted to do anything, and I think I just gravitated towards guitar, but I cannot tell you why. I was probably 10 or 11, I'm guessing. So, yeah, it was just again, something to keep me off the streets, maybe. You know.
That's what D. Boone's mom wanted me and him to be in a band. That was no career opportunity. It was like Econo child care. Keep you in the house after school. Yeah. So, this guitar, was it acoustic or electric?
Yeah, it was acoustic. And it was really small. Well, the first acoustic guitar I had was too big for me to play. So I just couldn't, you know, do anything proper with it. So I got a smaller one and was playing that for the bulk of my, and I think I took guitar lessons for maybe 4 or 5 years or so.
Well, let me ask you about that experience.
It was great. I mean, I had like really good guitar teachers who were just, they were, obviously they were the teacher component, but they're interested in like what I was trying to do. I mean, don't get me wrong. I wasn't like trying to invent anything or do any new type of guitar styles, but you know, they were at the music shop. There were also, you know, books of styles of music you could play. And I remember I knew what heavy metal was. I knew what hard rock was. They had a section for acid rock. And I didn't, but the thing is, so I assumed as like a liberal, like acid must be harder than metal, right? But it was just, you know, jam music.
Because you didn't know acid was actually a euphemism for L, right? You thought it could, like, eat metal, right?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I'm like, you know, I have no idea what's going on. But most of the stuff I put was fairly straightforward. By one guy who I really liked taking classes from, this dude, Tom, he was actually a banjo player first. And so we would talk a little bit about that kind of style, like not, you know, again, he's not showing me how to play guitar, clawhammer style or anything like that, but it was kind of just a nice little adjacent education. So I'm like, oh, well, that thing's got 5 strings. How much different can it be? It's like, oh, a lot different. So yeah, that's where it started.
But you know what? There is a connect. If you read the Keith Richard book, right? Well, he got it from, Ry Cooder. But that five-string open tuning shit comes from banjo.
Open tuning was, like, when I was in later other friends I would play together, like, open tuning was just, like, a godsend for, you know, the people who play the string instruments because, like, you could just go and, like, do harmonics, call it a day, and what we were doing, we were happy with, like just jamming out in the garage. But yeah, that open tuning where you just
Simple notes. For example, Ry Cooter claims he wrote Honky Tonk Woman intro, but don't tell him. But anyway, everything pollutes everything, but also makes stronger. It's trippy about human endeavors. Can I ask you the first record you bought with your own money?
I'm really excited about this question, I'll tell you that, because here's why. The first record I bought with my own money was the cassette of the score to the heavy metal movie soundtrack, because I saw it and I was like, whoa, the heavy metal soundtrack, $4.99. I'm so excited. And it was the Elmer Bernstein score. Yeah.
It's anime, right? You're not talking about the genre name,
No. Talking about the movie from 81. So
I
got into it, and then I just learned today that on this recording he debuted an instrument called the Ondes Martento, which is like this weird organ. And Messiaen, the French composer, he used it a lot for like kind of these drone things. So I thought that was kind of cool. But yeah, so I would just like listen to that on the back of my parents' car when we go on road trips, and like, you know, just. First, I was like trying to convince myself, like, yeah, okay, I really do like this stuff. But, you know, it grew on me. And then eventually I did get the actual heavy metal music soundtrack with, like,
It was a couple lyrics. I think it's in Mars Bonfire put it in Born to Be Wild. And it's in a Blue Oyster Cult song, ME-262. Like some heavy metal fruit and heavy metal thunder, I think, is in the Mars Bonfire. But was it really a genre name? It's like you said, acid rock. Or we also said hard rock. Like the first couple of Black Sabbath records. There's no word heavy metal. Now, can I ask you the first gig you saw?
First gig I saw? Iron Maiden in 1985 on the Power Slave tour.
Okay. Did any guy come out?
Oh, of course. Had to. But one of the bigger memories is Twisted Sister opened for.
Oh, wow.
The audience hated Twisted Sister, and I do remember at one point Dee Snider addressing the crowd saying, "We are not fighting Iron Maiden, we are fighting with Iron Maiden." And after I just found on YouTube, someone has a recording. It was at the Cow Palace up in San Francisco.
Sure, and where Keith Moon conked out and some dude from the crowd took over.
I read up on that guy because I thought that was amazing. Like, can anybody sit him for the drums? And, like, they pulled him out of the audience. That is an amazing story. I'm glad you mentioned that because that's a good reason
for you guys to prac, right? You never know when your gig's coming.
Yeah, what they said, they fortified him with a couple shots and just set him behind the kit. And we're like, all right, man, we're gonna walk you through it. Iron Maiden 85, that was an amazing show.
Can I ask you about grade school and shit? Were you in the choir, the marching band?
Nope, none of that. I didn't like group activities.
No problem. The main reason I ask that question is because some schools got rid of the music program.
Yes, they do. They cut funding to the arts first.
Yeah, right. And
that's what happens.
So, getting back, now not after school, like graduating, but after school in the afternoon, I'm not going to assume. I'm not going to make an ass out of you and me. But you might have went on to electric guitar, seeing that you like the Iron Maiden gig.
I went on to electric guitar, and then something you might know a little bit about, I went on to bass. It's like seeing Steve Harris was like, okay. Oh,
it was his band, right? Because he'd be out front singing all the words. Not with a microphone, but he'd be mouthing them.
And he'd be pointing the bass at you. A buddy just loaned me Flight 666, their tour video. It's amazing. Like, and this is from the aughts, I think. But yeah, that was, so I went to electric guitar.
That newer singer is a pilot, in fact, at a studio.
Yeah, Bruce Dickinson's a pilot.
The original guy. But I'm going to ask you about after school. Now, I don't mean graduating, but afternoon, the basement band, the bedroom band, the garage band. Did you do that?
No, I didn't. The guitar class and just jam was a very solitary pursuit. In high school, like, I was in a punk band for a real short while, where I was doing bass duties, as it were. That band eventually went on. They did stuff.
Why did you go to the bass?
Because there were the main reason was the guy who played guitar was a very competent guitarist. And I was, I knew enough musically that I could get through, and that's all they needed at the time.
Nobody else wanted to rock the bass.
Well, it was also like we needed someone to do the walking blues line for Cramps covers. You know, I could riff that along because we were basically like a meta cover band. Like we were covering Cramps songs, but at the time I didn't know the Cramps songs were covers. I'm like, you know, 17. I didn't know. I'm like, oh, maybe this is their real name on the sleeve. He's not really named Lux Interior, is he? So
no, yeah, it's like a Polish name. He's from Ohio. Man, he knew a lot about rock and roll. Oh, you know, old timey rock and roll. He's actually was a little older than Ig. But they watched us in Basque Country play. Him and Ivy, the best people. So sad to lose him. But a lot of that Cramps didn't have bass. They had two guitar drums.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. Like the, yeah. One of the jokes.
But some
like,
did. Some did later on. They had a lady, a couple ladies who played bass. Look, I want to play Your Hands Up 1974.
Yeah. Strange diseases, if it bleeds, it feeds and leaves you. Disbelieve on what else could go wrong. My black swan scar. Please, I got a nasty case to give us. Fuck, but please. Drugs are on drugs.
Somebody
does. Yeah, but nobody does. Nazis hate stinkers, hate maggots in the park. When they kill one another, you can tell them apart. One side's gone crazy about the way you look, and the other side does have a look. Pay the jungle, but you can wear shoes. Lock enough and lose it like a heretic too. Trade your guilt trip in for a holiday. From the attrition that is wishing it's a permanent state. War made the state, the state made war. That's the part of one of that. And anymore I'll give a fuck for tea.
You've got
I give a fuck for tea. That graveyard is a chaos with a parking lot where the pickup was discovered when the guy got sat with the styrofoam and petrol mixed in mason jars, rags and zipper lighters in a glove compartment, all point bullets in an old paint tin, and the key to an apartment at the Holiday Inn. What the fuck's he trying to do? Third Reich takes two. The peasants are revolting in the shops in for shoes. Take the wages of six over the minimum wage. I blow myself up to madness in one of them days. I'm not a kamikaze, don't wanna die. I'm just looking for a life that ain't a fucking false charger. Hey, give a fuck for these. Children in a ping pong joint, where a soldier of fortune 500 wins points, where the fucking bottle caused the bottle symptom.
From the mouth of a horse,
and an anonymous source, there's the Kimball, the Tic Tac. We'll be water on a Martians with a planet Earth flag. There's too much information, I can't get an erection. All I say is a constitution until after the election. The body can't fight, the body can't stop. Next to people making babies on the water, wide web. Give a fuck fatigue.
Thank you.
from Pedro Show, Vertonghen, started that chunk of music with Hands Up 1974, but not from 1974, people. You know you can't copyright a title.
That's true.
Right, right. Parallel Systems, System 01 from the Rambutan album. It's actually a double album. This has got McClay Duff, R2, Pardinen, Joe Tunis, and Matt Weston, Joe Schlesinger, Michael Kiefer, and Eric Hardiman. A lot of cats. This guy, Eric Hardiman, put together this record with different crews collaborating. And he's going to be on the show Sunday, and this is the first one. Rambutan, and this System 1. I guess each piece is a system. And then brand new from Tropical Fuckstorm, G-A-F-F. That's an acronym. I don't know what it means, people. Obama's Brendan with Carnivortex. Headboggle, he's on the show last week. C2U plus T-I. He's titled. Sam Lock Ward with Beach from Iowa City. A lot of beach out there. And finally, Vertonghen with Border of Lies. Okay, so how long does this Cramps shift last? Or not Cramps, but a tribute to the Cramps.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was just a kind of a covers. We were just a cover band. We played for a high school event and got in trouble because our vocalist during the Batman theme screamed out, "Holy shit, Batman," and that scared the adults. But so that was pretty short-lived, but one of the guys in the band introduced me to, so then I just kind of ceased doing more like straightforward rockish type stuff. My sister had acquired synthesizers at that point for the keyboards. So I started playing around with the DX7 and the Juno 88, and then I just started doing recording stuff like in the house that was not quite, you know, straight rock music. It was just whatever I could find to use as an instrument. And that was probably when I was, you know, senior year of high school, stuff like that. Just messing.
I didn't ask you, what was your bass?
Oh, it was a K, and it was $90.
My first bass was a K, too, and it was $100.
I remember you talking to either Brent Gutzeit or Aaron Dillaway or one of those gents. You talked to someone about bass stuff. But, it was not a very solid instrument. I was playing it through my sister's keyboard amp, which was really bass heavy. I forgot what that thing was called, but it was the Cube. It was a Cube 60, I think.
Okay. I remember those Cubes. I remember there was a Sonic Youth tour with, they used the, they put them on little tables, like the tables you get your drinks on.
Yeah.
It was funny, but that K, the action, you could fit your arm between the strings and the frets. So it helped build up my strength, made me cry a lot, too.
Ooh, yeah.
I won, you know, because me and D Boone only saw Arena Rock, so we didn't know really what a bass was. It looked like a guitar with four strings, and then I thought, when I finally learned, no wonder you only have four. Look how big these cables are.
Yes, yeah.
What about the left hand of those keyboards? Did you still get the bass going?
No, I was just like holding down keys and playing at the pitch shift. It wasn't music. It wasn't like, you know, I wasn't doing proper piano style. It was just like smushing down keys, trying different voices. Like, oh, hey, it makes like an orchestra and I can do the pitch shift adjustment and stuff like that. So, yeah, I wasn't really playing piano or keyboards properly, shall we say.
Oh, you mean the synths, like the fake trumpet, fake strings?
Yeah.
That was big in the 70s and 80s, too, I should say. But it's Man Alone, but are you recording? Because, you know, a lot of electronic cats have on the show. Hey, Watt, one of my first electronic instruments was the tape recorder.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking to Mick Gendre about the turntables and stuff like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Well, that's great. What about you?
Yeah, I recorded stuff probably when I was a little bit old, like 19, like maybe after when I came back from a first year of college or something like that. But, yeah, it was all cassette recordings. Some of the stuff I released, and it's, because right now it's like it's been 30 years since I did the first Vertonghen release. This was like pre even coming up with a name for the project. But I have recordings that, again, they aren't interesting enough to warrant revisiting. It was just, you know, somebody playing around in their parents' house and taking samples off the TV and shortwave radio sounds. Nothing even as a, oh, this is a starting point for where things are going to go.
Well, if like for you, I mean, you don't jump on the skateboard and start pulling ollies, right? You gotta fall down a few times. What kind of recorder? A cassette? A four-track? A
little handheld recorder. Little handheld, like...
You mean those micro cassettes?
I did have those, and actually I still use those a lot. micro cassettes, but yeah, just a little handheld standard cassette playback player. Yeah.
Okay.
That's
okay.
A three, four,
so
three.
These are only stereo things. So are you doing sound on sound?
Yeah, it's I record something, play it back through the stereo, and then put the microphone there, then record under another one. That's yeah, it was super about as low tech as one could get.
So like you did have kind of an accomplice, Mr. Hum or Mrs. Hum. She would get bigger with each bounce.
Yeah, this little 40 hertz ground hum. Yeah.
Okay, what about performances?
Performances didn't, well, I was, aside from that thing I mentioned in high school, a punk band, when I was in college, I was in a junk metal and electronics trio with some friends, and we would perform at this event on campus called Friars, Pickers, and Grinners, which was mostly like acoustic guitar and poetry, and we would bring up like car springs, washing machine dryer parts, things like this. And it was just, and those recordings, I was just listening to one under, the band was called Derail. And I was listening to one, and it's really great. It's one of those recordings where we have the room listening, you know, it's quiet before, and then we just suck all the air out of it. It's just obliteratingly loud, just three guys just hammering on these metals. And it was like, we had the one piece we were playing, which was like, whatever, 5 minutes long, but I was like, man, we nailed the ending, and the audience was just like, what is going on? Why are you making our stage impure with this racket? It was a blast, though. It was really fun to do.
But yeah, you nailed the ending, you know. That's what Big said about working a room. If you got a good beginning on a song and a good ending, you can have a big fucking sorote in between. It's okay.
Yeah, and then I would do solo metal percussion because, like, Zev was a huge influence.
Oh, yeah, I saw him a bunch of times.
Yeah, I got to know him. I released a pile of work by him, but I got to know him pretty well over the last 15 or 20 years of his life. And, he was a huge influence.
I almost seen him kill himself with that stuff. It'd be swinging.
Yeah.
Pieces of metal.
He was a very visceral performer. And, so he was a huge, just as an artist, like all the personas he would work with, all the different styles, like the sound poetry stuff he did, like that was a huge, huge influence.
Believe it or not, a huge inspiration to me. Okay, yeah, I work this kind of rock and roll thing, but for me, music's music. And that guy was, especially at those times where I was throwing out the Berlin Walls in my head, it was Hong Kong Cafe, late 70s, right? And the city in those days had a bigger scene than Hollywood, you know? And so we always looked for a lot of those bands. Like, and it wasn't just bands. It was like punk was anything you could get on the stage.
Yeah.
It wasn't just fast guitars and a haircut.
Well, also, like, what you've talked about, I know, like, you're a fan of, like, James Joyce.
Big
like,
time.
You pull these influences from all sorts of stuff, and, like, however you shape it, like, that's where it really gets the rubber to the road, you know?
But, Blake, these were the kind of cats I was meeting at the gigs. Yeah, they were weird. You could tell they didn't fit in with Square John thing, but, man, they were deep into things, and they were trippy things. It wasn't like people putting on a stupid act, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I got contaminated.
You know,
it's not
the worst contamination. I saw, I'd seen the Desolation Center video with you guys out on the boat.
Oh, later. Yeah, in Peter. right?
Yeah. But like the early stuff in the desert with like SNRL, like, we're going to blow up this mountain. Like, that's part of the performance. Like, that's awesome.
They were like, Mickey Big Mouth full of fucking gasoline and shit all put around. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, June 25, 2021. This Juan Pedro's special guest, Blake Edwards. Hold tight for hour two. June 25, 2021. It's the second hour of the Juan for Pedro show.
Thank you. good sense of the real thing. Out she comes, no hesitation. We'll draw together a bunch of fragments, like that artificial intelligence in Mona Lisa Overdrive. Signification. Signification. I've become acutely aware, I've been watching myself for some time. I've become acutely aware, I've been watching myself for some time. Drawing a long bar, you get a good idea of the real thing.
brother bought a coconut. He bought it for a dime. Sister bought another one and traded for a lime. She put the lime in the coconut and drank them both up. She put the lime in the coconut and drank them both up. She put the lime in the coconut and drank them both up. She put the lime in the coconut. Called the doctor and woke him up and said, "Doctor, is there nothing I can take?" She said, "Doctor, to relieve this bellyache." She said, "Doctor, is there nothing I can take?" She said, "Doctor, to relieve this bellyache." Now let me get this straight. You put the lime in the coconut. You put them both together. Put the lime in the coconut, and then you feel better. Put the lime in the coconut, drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut. Called the doctor and woke him up and said, "Doctor, is there nothing I can take?" You said, "Doctor, to relieve this bellyache." You said, "Doctor, is there nothing you can take?" I said, "Doctor, to relieve this bellyache." You put the lime in the coconut, you drink them both together. Put the lime in the coconut, and then you feel better. Put the lime in the coconut, and drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut, and drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut, and drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut, drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut, drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut, drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut and drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut and drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut, drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut and drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut, drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut and drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut and drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut, drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut and drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut and call me in the morning.
Show start off the second hour with Impure Agencies from Vertonghen, and Ben Salter from Tasmania with Failure. Rice Corpse. Now, this is Lucas Abel of Sydney, but when he went to China and collaborated with a couple of musicians there, and this band Rice Corpse of Proj, and this tune, No Penis. Then Rick Weaver after that with a cover or a reinterpretation. You know, people say, oh, three chords. Fucking Harry Nilsson's Lime and a Coconut, that's all C7, people. You don't even need three. One chord, okay? And finally, Vertonghen with Lost in the Tumbler, which maybe you don't want to be. Or maybe you do. Bouncy Castle. Now,
off air. Fill with broken glass.
Yeah, that's it. Mafia stuff. No, I guess that's Paletta with fucking ground glass, right? So it takes a month to kill you, bleed to death. Off air, people. Me and Blake were talking about Brother Zev, and he's got some interesting things. You know, they never got to collab, but go ahead, Blake.
Yeah, so Zev and I would talk about, I'd bring up some ideas about collaborating with him. I really was interested, I still am a huge fan of his Oots material, which while most people, like I were talking about, is most people are aware of the metal percussion, but he did a lot of sound poetry stuff with electronics under the moniker Oots. And I had asked about doing some of that, and he's like, I just don't have what it takes to do that anymore lyrically. But I was saying, Zev passed away in Chicago, and I actually had what I would consider the privilege of actually being able to cremate him, which was an honor, I should say. And it was a good, a lot of the folks who were on various social media groups who are fans, I thought it was super important for someone who was close to him to be involved with that, so it wasn't just some anonymous person taking care of it.
Yeah, and you know, if you want to ask Watt his opinion about the zeitgeist, you know, the spirit of the times, of the movement, he was a big part of that, man. I mean, he was get us away from arena rock and this, and even get us back to Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis in a way. Because, you know what I mean, as far as the spirit, go ahead.
Yeah, no, what you're saying with, like, the presence, like, I think about, like, Neubauten, just these very visceral performers. And he was that, if nothing else. He was super visceral with especially, you know, in the 70s with the wild style, as he called it, of just what you were mentioning earlier off air, like this just flailing around pieces of metal, car springs, plastic bottles filled with things, and you just have to, you're going to respond to it one way or another. And it's a super intense experience, and even his more meditative stuff is just as encompassing.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff would get into a groove, believe it or not, in the room. And it'd be like, you know what I mean? Like James Jamerson at the scrapyard or something. It was just such a mind blow the way he did that. And in a way, it was like the G.O. He was giving us the go, man. Let the freak flag fly. Whatever, yeah. You know, get on the tumbler. Or in the tumbler.
Yeah, I was going to say, or just build your own tumbler, you know.
Right. Yeah, I want to play this air filtration and ventilation desalinization facility. That's the title. Why for Pedro show? For toning. With air filtration and ventilation desalinization facility. Then brand new from Coed, Air, Blood Quartet. This is Mark Cunningham from Mars. He's in Barcelona. Velvet Love from his new album. Manuel Armida out of, he's from Mexico, but he's living in Yellowknife. Pass to the Right, Bad News About You. And then finally, Invocation for Vertonin. So tell me about this name, Vertonin. When did this arrive as your name for your expression?
It started right when I released, before I released the first thing, like in 91. I forget where I got from it. It had to be from a German dictionary because it's German for set to music. And I just like that idea of like whatever I'm assembling, very John Cage, like you don't have to call it music if you don't want to. Like this is, I'm calling music, whether, you know, if it's a sound of rustling paper or a desalination facility, yeah. Like that's going to be music in my terms.
No, I'm way into that, man. And that's the best elixir against genre pollution. the Berlin Wall shit I was talking about before. So, You went for it really early, but you said you were doing stuff. What's with some stuff not Vertonin, and then some stuff was Vertonin?
Yeah. So I started with a junk metal trio, which was called Derail.
Derail, right.
And then I had some collaborations with some friends that went under. One was called Enemo, Ehenehmo. But the reason we got that name was it's the expansion of the letters NMO, which stood for 90 minutes of, because we just record for 90 minutes in the garage and then see what we could salvage from it.
Why? Because the cassettes are 90 minutes?
Yeah, 90 minutes tape. Yeah, so just play it, flip it, and like see if we can get 10 minutes of anything worthwhile out of it.
Nowadays when I make albums with people, 40 minutes, because more than 20 minutes aside, you get the bass gets cut down.
Yeah. So there was that, and then there was Luke's Fool, which is another offshoot of a band I was with some friends. It was more loop-based, and my buddy had an electric clavichord he'd built that he was using to generate rhythms and drone stuff from. And my other friend had I think he probably had a chord of some sort, but yeah.
Now, your loop thing, do you do it different ways? Is sometimes with tape, sometimes with a sample, sometimes with a machine?
It's funny because if we go back to actually Zev and his Oons thing, he had a way he was making records skip intentionally that I was doing a totally different way. And his way seemed much more complex but much more rewarding than someone like Boyd Rice was also doing record skips. But
I just
have a piece of Tupperware turned upside down on the old like caliphone and just let the needle hit it.
Oh wow! You know? Well, some cats would actually have closed grooves mastered and use them.
I've done that. Yeah, I've done a locked groove record. Those are super valuable because you're playing back your own stuff in multiple iterations. But yeah, it was mostly that. And then I had a pedal, a PDS 8000. Which did 8-second loops that you could then pitch shift. And then I have another looping device on a rack mount system, a Lexicon Jamman. But like you have someone like, I know you talked to Dilloway and yes. His looping system. I mean, he is like, my God, the dude's a master with the 8-track stuff. Like he just goes on like someone like Robert Terman. Like a lot of these guys are doing super.
Well, we got to tell the listeners, 8-tracks are basically loops.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's one thing, right? People, they're four different programs, but because of stereo, that's why they're called 8-tracks. But they're one fucking piece of tape.
Yeah, and I was a DJ at a few college radio stations, and we had cart machines, which were the same. They were like they looked a lot like 8-tracks. We dropped the cart. Yeah, you do public service announcements, and you could play with those. And I found one once, and it was not grounded right, and I learned that a very difficult way, that it was not grounded very well.
You got shocked?
Yeah, it was.
Or what electric people say, bit. You got bit. And people, here's the lesson, especially with some high, one hand, keep the other hand behind your back, because if you get only 100 mils across your chest, you're dead.
You got to keep yourself grounded.
Right. So, but... Yeah, well, there was a 4-track before the 8-track where the mechanism actually went inside the cartridge.
Yeah.
So you're just exploring all the ways to keep it a one-man band. Although you talk about these collabs and stuff, it seems like this was your mission.
Yeah, totally. I like to do stuff of my own volition and just have, you know, complete editorial or composition or whatever kind of control you want to have. Because I just want it to be, this is my whatever I'm throwing out into the world, and nobody else has to, you know, get buy-in or, you know, pitch something in a different direction.
Right. It's not compromised.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, here it is, people. Now you decide.
Totally.
It's not like, wow, I have to make this shortcut because they'll like me. Right? That never works. I mean, even in the short term, you know, you win the sucker boy lotto, but fuck, come on.
Yeah.
You know, and I've seen plenty of cats like that where music's just, they won the lotto and it's service in a lifestyle, but they don't really like music. And then these cats, I know, that love music, the marketplace gives no reward to them.
No.
So fuck this. The whole fucking trip is... Anyway, we're into it because the bug bit us and we can't, like, we'll get an electricity shock. Huh? We're at the end of the second hour. June 25, 2021 edition of Watt Peter Show. Special guest, Blake Edwards. Hold tight for hour three. June 25, 2021. It's the third hour. Watt Peter Show.
I'm
Pedro Show. Third hour, start off with Vertonghen and Frozen Boy. Buoy, okay, people? Nobody's getting hurt here. There's no boy froze. Port Sunshine after that out of Hamburger, Steam Submarine. Hanson Parker, Bus Stop Sun. Schneller Tollermeyer from Switzerland, Sing For Me. They were on the show last week. Pavda, Hal Ramel, and Linda Binder with Duet for a New Day. This is from a great compilation from, you said his name, Brett Goodside, right? Good Time.
Yeah, Brent, yeah. Brent
he just sent me a track. Times. Yeah, the Good Time, right? A great name, I love it. He's in Milwaukee, and he's got this label, and they put out this comp, Let's Build a Better Reality, and a lot of great fucking music on it. And he just sent me a tune this morning that I'm putting on bass right now.
Nice.
And finally, Vertonghen with Chatterboxer. This is a tune, man. So, you know, I'm wondering how you put this together. What's your composition?
So composition is usually I'll have, like, the things are really conceptually based. Like, I'll have this idea, like, Hands Up 1974. It's all about Patty Hearst and the SLA.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So I'll be wanting to use samples. Yeah. Yeah, so samples from that, and then just finding any audio sound that can be either adjusted some way to carry through the concept that I want to have in mind. Then there's other stuff like Chatterbox, where it's just like fast forwarding cassettes, really herky jerky, and then layering them in a multi-track.
Now, I've had cats on the show. There are different ways of scoring. Some guys are totally graphic, like they draw. It's almost storyboard, like a film or a TV.
Right. That would not be me. Okay. That would not be me. I would say I do a lot of editing. Like maybe this is common for a lot of other folks, but like after I have finished a recording, let's say, I pretty much don't listen to it ever again because I spent so much time in the editing process on the computer, like adjusting things or, you know, dropping to different tracks or removing things or filters or whatever it is. So it's like I've done my duty. Like I created it. Now it's out in the world for someone else to.
Well, can I ask you this? Yeah. Okay, you don't listen to it again, but does it go into some kind of library where some of it can be repurposed?
You know, it's funny you should mention that because I don't like to do the same thing twice. So for a while, I would like, if I had, let's say, a sample of a piece of equipment working, and I was like, oh, I really like this. If I used it like more than a few times, I'd be like, wait a minute, I've done this before. Like, I liked it then, and it worked. So I feel like it's an awkward use to try and repurpose it in some other way just because it seems to, in air quotes, fit there. So every 6 months, I just pretty much clean out everything on the machine that's saved. And then once the recording's done, I remove, delete all of the files that built it, but I have a master file in case like a CDR goes bad or something like that. But yeah, I've really been fervent about getting rid of stuff and not using things again.
Now, when you say that, you're talking motifs and you're not talking about the actual machine, or do you move on to another machine?
No, thank you for clarifying that. Yeah. No, I use the same machines. Like I have a synthesizer, I have a turntable, I have a couple custom built electronic things that I use, but then as you're saying, like then I'll just do different flavors of it. Like I'll still be using this one scratch record I have, but I'm going to be processing it differently or something like that. But yeah, I don't just like, all right, well, I just bought the synthesizer, use it for record. No, I'm done with it. Yeah, no, I don't.
But there's the other thing too. If you go to reverb.com or something, there's this human thing about fetish over gear. We're almost six. Yeah. Where if you, I don't know who said this, but somebody said once, you know, you got a pen knife. The art ain't in the pen knife. It's what's going to be carved with the fucking knife.
Yeah, and that's like when I forgot who said it, but like it's basically like there's a guy out in LA, AMK, like he does cut up flexi disc records. That's what he does, and he does it super well. Like the idea of like master one instrument, or don't even master, just get to know it. Like he knows his stuff inside and out. And I have a Russian synthesizer because I'm like, okay, if I'm gonna get a synth, I'll get something weird. So I got a Russian synthesizer. I haven't mastered that at all, but it's like it is my go-to if I want to start exploring. And I don't have an interest in actually getting modulars or any other stuff because I'm just not that tech intrigued, I guess.
Right, like. How good of a pencil, how good a pad of paper. You get the most primo pencil, primo pieces of paper, but you still got to write the fucking story.
Yeah. You got to do something. Yeah. That's the big thing. Like this idea of like just getting gear to like fill a void.
That's right. Gear won't. You know? Yeah. But there's a fetish on it, huh? Would you agree?
I think there is.
With bass players, oh my God, besides the fanny pack and the ponytail, it's, you know, the thing that looks like a coffee table of 30 strings.
Yeah.
I want to play this from Always and Yet Always.
Thank you. Why do you need to know that?
Why do you ask?
Why?
Black the Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Vertonghen, Always and Yet Always. Love that time. Then Joe Morris and Damon Smith, brand new. Double of Any. And then finally Vertonghen with version 2 of Perry and Eliza. I wonder what version 1 was like.
I can tell you, it was a live version of that, a longer 20-minute version of that piece.
Okay. Tell me about titles with you, Blake.
So, again, well, it's interesting because I think about, like, when we briefly touched, like, you know, you enjoy James Joyce. Yeah. I am hugely influenced by a lot of literary folks. I really like the Ulipo movement, a lot of the experimental French writers. So that is one thing that informs me. But, like, this Perry and Eliza, like, the text that's spoken is the first example of interactive computer AI, where two computer programmers, one created someone that was going to serve as a therapist. Like, that was one of the early things. Like, you'd phone in, and the computer on the other end would have a voice recognition database. So if you say, "Hi, my name is Mike, and I feel happy," the voice would say, "Mike, tell me why you feel happy." Ah. And so what they did is they had these two things. One is the doctor, and one is this patient, Perry. There's Perry and Eliza. Eliza is the female doctor. Perry is the patient. And they programmed him to be a sociopath or a psychopath. And so they wanted to see, like, how they would interact. And it's obviously tough because it's computers being stilted, but the conversation is so fascinating. Like, it makes me think of how, especially with experimental writing and stuff, like the idea of intentionally missed cues, and where someone says something, you purposely ignore them. Like, if someone said, "Hey, Mike, let's talk about your huge bass collection," you're like, "I'm not going to talk about that because that's not important to me." And you're just going to focus on something else, right? So it's that's where a lot of that comes from. And then, you know, the other ones, like, again, back to, well, The Invocation, that was taken, that's inspired by, like, all of the Jonestown stuff in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah. That's just terrible. By Kezar Stadium.
People's Temple.
People's Temple.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm super interested, just as adjacent to that, like, I was really fascinated by a lot of the alternative, either religious or political movements from the 70s, hence, like, the SLA, hence, you know, all these groups that were the RAF over in Germany, things like that. Those are just fascinating. Those kind of movements are intriguing to me. So they also inform that through the filter of, like, you know, literary stuff, things like the Joycean stuff.
Well, can I ask you, at what point does the title come in?
Sometimes it's the first thing that hits me. Sometimes.
That's the way I always got to write songs. That's why I ask people that, because hardly anybody does it. So I'm glad to find a co-conspirator coming up with the title first.
And then, like, for example, like, I knew, like, for that one, the desalination, like, I knew the recordings I had of various facilities, and I just wanted to put them together. And I'm very much back to that mesh for the desalination. I'm very interested in, like, mixing these things. So it's like, I'm putting in air filtration system from a copper plant with a backhoe, like two things that don't go together, but now I've created a new machine, as it were, audio, a new aural machine that doesn't exist. And so, again, that's really heavily influenced by a lot of the Ulipo literature and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Think about Cut Up, right? Tarantula, Bobby Dylan, or Mr. Burroughs with his Naked Lunch.
Yeah, and what Zev was doing with the Oontz stuff.
Zev was doing also with the Oontz.
Totally.
You know what? I got to start playing some more Oontz on the show, because that shit was great. I love it. I love it. Where can people find you on the internet, Blake?
They can do my current label is Ballast. They type in Ballast NVP. That's going to get them to the blog spot, probably. Ballast NVP.
Okay, spell it.
Oh, sorry, BALLASTNVP.
Okay. And then what's your current endeavor? You got a proj, a plan? Have you been collaborating, trading files, or is it man alone?
I've always got something going on at some point. I have to do it to balance out the 9-to-5 job. You know, that's one of the reasons. So I have a collaboration with my buddy Eric Lundy, who also does a lot of textual work. He's up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We have a project called Dead Edits, which is, again, super heavy text-based and cut-up and cassette work, like the ideas of machines that are falling apart and on the verge. I have something I worked on a while ago, and now it's going to be a 30-year retrospective of my stuff. I've got a couple of CD-length releases that are in the pipeline in various stages. I've got a 4-cassette release. Yeah, I'm just always doing – I've always got something going on.
Always, well, of course, your retrospective
– in the fire.
Yeah, the retrospective sounds really interesting, but so does this Minneapolis thing. When you get that done, will you guys come on the show and you can hear it and talk about it?
Yeah, we actually just released a dice game.
Okay. Well, we can talk about that too.
No. That's we're going for abstract art here, man. And there's a cassette, but there's also a dice game.
That's beautiful. Such an honor to have you on the show. Thanks so much. Can't wait to have you back.
Thank you so much, Mike. Okay. I appreciate it.
Right, man. People, it's been June 25, 2021. Dishwap Pedro. So keep your pattern right.